It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, in today for Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk to a state representative about her efforts to overturn the state's constitutional ban on same-sex marriage.
But first, in honor of Valentine's Day, we're talking about love with a true expert. Our next guest has gotten a panoramic view of love by editing the New York Times Modern Love column for the last 10 years.
He's boiled down all the wisdom he's gleaned from the column in a new book, and he's with us to share that wisdom now.
Our guest is Daniel Jones, author of Love Illuminated, Exploring Life's Most Mystifying Subject with the Help of 50,000 Strangers. He's a contributing editor at the New York Times, where he's edited the Modern Love column since it started in 2004. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, in the book, you talk about how you yourself, you really closed yourself off to love for years on end, and how, as a result of that, or despite that, did you become the editor of the New York Times Modern Love column?
Yeah, it's a little weird, isn't it? I mean, the time when I was out of touch with my feelings, if I want to put it that way, was back when I was in college and my first several years out of college, where, like a lot of people, love scared me. Being vulnerable scared me. Being rejected scared me. And so I sort of kept my distance from all of that. And, it was many years later when I ran into the woman who would be my wife, and she got me talking about these things.
Well, and it does seem really interesting that there are points in our lives where we are feeling very afraid, very vulnerable, and we'll talk about being vulnerable and love in a little bit. But it seems like a lot of the time we're both really afraid of it, and we also, there are a few things we want more than to be loved and to have someone to love.
Exactly. I mean, the stakes couldn't be higher, which is, what causes both the desire and the fear. And you can't really, people... What I've noticed in almost more than anything, and something I explore in the book, is how desperately we try to sort of find shortcuts through the difficult parts of love. And we try to find a shortcut through vulnerability, and we exploit technology to do so and whatever other means, but there is no shortcut.
And you talked about having been closed off and that your now wife kind of found you despite your best efforts. Was that the start of you opening up and being willing to take those risks, was when she appeared?
Oh, I think it had, my evolution had started a few years before. I was interested in writing, and I went to graduate school for writing out in Arizona, in Tucson, Arizona. And that's a world where, everybody is trying to explore what they're feeling and how they can get it down. In this case, it was fiction and also nonfiction. But I'd say that the process began then, because you really can't be a writer and be afraid of going into all those sort of weighted and dark areas.
So as you were starting to go into those dark areas of love, did you have to develop something of a new vocabulary? Was it almost like learning a new language to talk about those topics that you had kind of held at arm's length?
I'd say it was a new language. It was also just having any language to be able to start those kinds of conversations. It just wasn't really a subject that I talked about at length before.
So you get many stories sent to you from a huge range of people. How do you logistically sift through all of those stories that you get from readers every day?
Well, it's a very orderly process. They come in every day at the rate of over a year, I guess about 5,000 a year.
Wow.
And I just, in a very democratic way, start with the ones that came in last. And try to work my way forward and try to stay on top of it. But it's a tough task. You would think that an open submission column where people are sending in their stories, and some of them are writers and some of them are not, you'd think there'd be a lot of bad material you could dismiss quickly, but there isn't really. Mm-hmm. It's really a lot of well-written material.
Oh, and so how do you decide what gets published? Is it something that resonates with you? Is it something you think will resonate with your listeners? Is it kind of an iconic love situation, or is it a totally unique love situation? What's the criteria?
Well, you know, you said it all. It is all of those things. Usually, when you're in my position and you're reading so much material, you become so easily bored. So something that is fresh and keeps your attention stands out. And usually the choice is a fairly obvious one, but it can have to do with the particular voice or perspective. But the subject matter is important. I hope to cover sort of a kaleidoscope of human experience, and certain topics get covered, and you're not going to cover them again the next week or in the next month or in the next 3 months. So having a fresh perspective and that we really haven't covered ever or haven't covered within months is important. And also having something that's called modern love. It's not just called love. Mm-hmm. So some aspect of the experience that's contemporary, that would happen now and wouldn't have happened 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Well, and thinking of it in that, through that lens of modern love, I mean, modern life is really dominated with opportunities for us to express ourselves, whether it's on our Facebook status, whether it's on a blog, whether it's talking to friends socially at work. What do you think it is that is still an attraction to people to actually send in their story to a column or a columnist like you?
It's kind of an individual thing, I think, but what I value about the column and what I think readers value about the column is that we learn through stories. You know, stories teach us how to live and always have and always will. And the love industry, if you're going to call it that, has been sort of taken over by people telling you what to do and advice from, you know, supposed experts. I think what's valuable about the column is that it teaches through example, not always of good behavior, but of what people have experienced and what they've struggled with. And people teach themselves by reading these sorts of stories.
I'm guessing that the vast majority of stories you read, you digest, and then, you know, you kind of send it on its way. But I'm wondering if there are some stories that just really stick with you that you're not able to shake, maybe in a very positive way or maybe in a negative way.
Oh, absolutely. Among the, you know, the best stories we've run have been, you know, devastating stories that were, I'm sure, very painful for the person to write about, whether it involved the loss of a spouse, or in one case this summer, I published a poet from Chicago named Courtney Queenie, who'd written a very difficult piece about getting beaten up in her apartment by her boyfriend, and fleeing the scene and calling the police, and then the process of the following months of trying to get a restraining order and bonding with other people in her situation in courtrooms who are also seeking restraining orders, and exposing that whole world. What a difficult piece to write, but it hit readers like an exploding bomb. You know, it was really a powerfully done piece.
We're talking with Daniel Jones, author of Love Illuminated and editor of the Modern Love column in the New York Times. He's with us to talk about love, especially modern love, on this Valentine's Day.
And we want to hear from you now. What do you think about the state of modern love today? How much has love changed in your lifetime, or has it at all? How did you meet the one, the person you're with now, or the one that got away? Do you have any questions, advice that our guest may have learned writing this column and taking these stories in? Call us, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can send an email, talk@WPR.org.
We're continuing our discussion now with Daniel Jones about his new book, Love Illuminated.
We're taking your calls now. What do you think about the state of love today? How has love changed? Are ideas of love changed over your lifetime, if at all? And do you want to share your story of how you met the one or the one that got away on this Valentine's Day? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org.
And in fact, Daniel Jones, let's start with a call. We have Ben in Green Bay on the line. Hi, Ben.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, just was wondering, you know, if Daniel had any thoughts about, love sort of in the digital modern world. We have these digital presences now that we're able to, delete and edit our words and things we want to say. And, if there's anything that we're missing in, reality from compared to when we can just, create our digital presences. And so if he has any thoughts about that.
Thanks for that call, Ben. Daniel?
That's one of the subjects that I hear so much about. And, it's interesting because it's such an opportunity to meet people online, and it's so easy compared to how it used to be. And you can look up profiles of people. You can meet people through Twitter or through Facebook or through any number of social media platforms. But I think a lot of people, and what I've discovered and what I explore in the book, is it's so easy to get close emotionally to someone online. And we're fooled a little bit into thinking that this is a bond that will then easily extend into a physical relationship when we meet the person. But so often we race so far ahead with this deep emotional connection with someone online, and then you meet in person, and it doesn't even seem like the same person you are communicating with online because the emotional has raced so far out ahead of the physical connection.
Well, and you also talk in the book, Daniel, about the fact that because a lot of people are using, say, online dating services, you can narrow down the pool of people that you're looking at, and you might be narrowing down and eliminating a person that would be perfect for you or would be the person that you really connect with. But because you put certain limits on age or income or smoking or religion, you've basically lost that person before you even start.
Exactly. It makes us think that we ought to know in advance who we'd be compatible with, but we ought to know according to categories, not according to a specific person. And so often, and I've seen this again and again, we're surprised by who we fall in love with, and we're surprised by how opposites can attract, and we're surprised by a magnetism we can feel in person with someone who we would have ruled out on paper. So that although the world of online dating is a boon in terms of how it exposes us to, just limitless numbers of people, it also, with a lot of people makes us retreat into thinking we should only go out with people who are like us or who are, a certain height or make a certain amount of money or are religion or have our same hobbies. And those are dangerous thoughts to think, in terms of ruling people in or out.
It's really interesting, I think, because part of the attraction of doing something like online dating is that you feel like there's this limitless pool of possibility. Mm-hmm. But there's no way to actually explore that whole pool. So we do narrow it down. But then that means that we are limiting basically what we can imagine as a possible love connection. We're limiting it down to that smaller pool anyway.
Exactly. I say in the book, it's more for the schemer than the dreamer, because you're forced to scheme in a way about who you think you would love. You don't think so much with an open mind when you're trying to rule people out. The whole goal is to rule people out because you can't possibly date 100,000 people. You really risk ruling out all kinds of people who might have been perfect for you or you might have felt an incredible magnetism for if it hadn't been for the online, process.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that really struck me in reading the book is that you talk about how the Peace Corps actually turns out to be this great relationship factory.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
And it's kind of, if you think about meeting a partner in the Peace Corps, it's about as polar opposite as you can get from that limitless pool of, say, on Match.com or OkCupid.
I hear that again and again, that you know, imagine that you're alone on a desert island with four people. You know, you're probably going to fall in love with one of them. No matter who they are, you're probably going to fall in love with one of them if that's what you're limited to. And it's almost a relief for some people to have that huge amount of choice taken away. You stop forever thinking there's someone better out there. You stop that sort of endless distraction of being on one date and thinking already about what the next one's going to be and who the next person's going to be. And you start focusing on getting to know somebody. And you move from sort of the shallow evaluation of a person to the deeper evaluation of a person. And it has a higher success rate, I think, than the exposure to the 100,000 mm-hmm. strangers online.
So does that old-fashioned dating that you just said would probably happen on a desert island or maybe in the Peace Corps, is that still alive and well in our modern technological world?
Well, I think it's certainly still alive and well. I almost think it's the way that most people still continue to meet, whether it's in school or at a job or in a club or through friends. Those are still the main ways, but many, many people are you know, looking for love in ways that involve algorithms and science and technology.
Let's go back to the phones, and David in Burlington is up next. Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
Well, you know, I'm not a young man anymore, and my wife and I have been married for almost 40 years. And I still think like a young man, though. And but what I found about love is it's about commitment. It's well, my wife and I have a lot in common, and we appreciated that in the beginning. But it's more the where love has grown the most over the years is in what's given away and not in what's received. And just commitment to family and making it work no matter what, and keeping your promises and respect. That's what's important to me in love now.
Thanks for that call, David. And Daniel, is that a theme that you see in the submissions that you get?
Yes. The last chapter of my book, I asked the question, do you think love is more of a feeling or a choice? And, you know, most people will say that it's a little bit of both. When I posed that question to my wife, she said, without missing a beat, romantic love is a feeling and married love is a choice. I didn't know if I should be insulted by that or not. But it's true to a large extent. We feel love during a romantic phase of life, and we begin to choose love when the romance and the passion starts to fade. You choose who you want to be with and who you want to stay with. And as the caller said, you commit to that person. You know, not always are marriages meant to last forever, and people can be worse together and maybe should be apart. But there definitely is that sort of transition, I think, for most couples from the feeling to the choice.
So all of these stories that you've read over the years of people's love lives and the impact different events have had on them, it gives you and the readers a snapshot of that period in their life. Is it difficult for you not to know how things turn out in the long run just to have that little slice of life?
In the long run for the essays themselves?
Is it hard for you to read about their lives and maybe care about what happens to them but not get that resolution whether things turned out well, whether they turned out badly?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I feel like I sort of weighed in their lives just for a short amount of time. Although with a lot of these people, believe it or not, I've kept in touch with them and heard about their, you know, struggles to continue or how they've come out of something for the better. And it's been an interesting long-term process over the years to hear back from people and hear their subsequent stories.
Daniel, what's one piece of love advice that you would offer our listeners on this Valentine's Day?
You know, one thing that I've really noticed and that I explore in the book as well is this concept of a soulmate and how so many of us now, you know, love used to more be about practicality and then it became, I mean, marriage used to be about practicality and then it really became about romantic love. And this idea that we're supposed to be with a certain person out there, and I think 73% of Americans believe that, that there's someone out there that we're meant to be with. And I think the concept of soulmate works if someone over 5, 10, 15, 20 years becomes your soulmate and becomes someone who knows you deeply and you believe you're meant to be with them. But I think people going and looking for love with the idea that there's a perfect person out there for them, that proves to be a very high standard. And I think a lot of relationships unravel maybe prematurely because we expect that person to be perfect from the start.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Daniel.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
That was Daniel Jones, author of Love Illuminated, Exploring Life's Most Mystifying Subject with the Help of 50,000 Strangers. He's a contributing editor at the New York Times, where he's edited the Modern Love column since 2004. He joined us for a Valentine's Day look at love.